You are listening to Promenade Punks, episode 453, the internet's third most popular Deep Space Nine podcast. Hi, I'm Adam White. Today we're talking about DS9 season 4, episode 15, Sons of Moog, in which Worf's brother comes to the station and asks him to kill him after Worf had dishonored his family. Now, what I really want to talk about in this episode is how Sisko comes down so hard on Worf for trying to participate in this ritual suicide ceremony with his brother, whereas the Federation really should, as part of their whole ethos of respecting other cultures, allow Worf to do this, but that's not what happens. Instead, Sisko comes down hard on him and says that that's not about the values of the Federation. So I really want to dig into this because I don't think that the episode proper actually addresses the moral quandary properly. So I'm going to throw it to you, Tom. Tom, what do you think?
What the...
Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. Tom Trauma out of northern-ish, northern? Is it northern Michigan? Let's say northern.
Dude, I'm almost so far north that I'm almost as far north as you are.
You might be further north than I am. Like Michigan juts up into Canada.
I don't think so.
Like a knife. I mean,
there are parts of Canada that are approximately the same as me, but I don't think... You are in that group.
There is actually a place in Canada that is south of the United States and is not...
Not
in Alaska standpoint, but not like in Michigan. Yeah, like it dekes around in some strange way and like falls beneath
Michigan. I gotta tell you, Adam, I would prefer to speak of geography as opposed to... Star Trek.
I don't know what
I'm a Star Wars guy.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Tom. Also joining me on the show tonight out of Philadelphia-ish. We'll say ish. The Worf of our group. Mr. John Gentile. Hey, John.
You mean the guy that everyone says is tough but actually whines a lot and gets his ass kicked all the time? Thanks, guys. What annoys
you said
me about
it. You said it, John. You said it. What annoys I just me, meant because you're hideously deformed. But
what annoys me about DS9 is they're always like, racism is bad. Racism is bad. Every race is equally good. Oh, except the Ferengi. Man, I hate those guys. What a lousy race is.
That's not a race. That's a species, isn't it?
But Star Trek uses species as a metaphor for race. And they're always
I can still look down on like badgers, right?
Don't say that. Don't say anything about badgers. Holy fuck. Like, you realize the backlash.
All our Wisconsin listeners are going to be super pissed.
Oh, we're going to get the show. We're going to get canceled.
Anyway, the characters in Star Trek are very
Our ratings are going to drop to an all-time low. We'll get canceled. Sorry.
Characters in Star Trek are very racist towards Ferengi, and everyone actually gets all right. So take from that what you will.
I don't even know what Ferengis are.
Oh, I'm sorry for just derailing this whole show. So hi, this is the Punkies Podcast.
What the Ferengi look like? And they're not like a tribble or something.
It's like three tribbles stacked on top of each other. So we're going to talk about some of the stuff that happened in the Punkies universe over the past week. Maybe a little bit more than a week. It's been a while, hasn't it? I feel like it's been a while.
I thought it's been a while since we kicked it.
It's been like 8 days. I think it was supposed to be last Wednesday, and I had to bail.
Yeah. Well, anyways, it's been forever. There's lots of stuff. There's lots of weird little things that have happened that we want to talk about. But before we do that, any mail you want to get through, John?
Yes, you can always use that at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Zissel, and here's what Zissel has to say. Thanks for uploading all of the old episodes of the podcast. I listened to older episodes on my drive home from work. I forgot how things happen, so most episodes are a surprise to me. Do you have any one favorite episode from Zissel?
Well, first of all, don't do that. That's a weird, bad idea.
That is a good idea that you should continue to do this.
I used to do that before I was on all the time. I used to listen to the old ones, like, try to catch up.
No,
I went back to the beginning.
No, okay. This isn't me like negging on the podcast like I normally do. This is a genuine question. Is that like for the most part, this is a news and current affairs podcast, at least within the punk rock universe. So is there any value in going back and listening to us go like, there's an Against Me record coming out when that was like three records ago? I don't know what the appeal is.
That's why I try to add value, Adam, by trying to derail the boring news of the week and talk about important things like Danzig and Star Wars and stuff like that.
I suppose.
Try to create a certain amount of timelessness, as it were.
This is like the least evergreen podcast that there could be. It's like... I like to think that
we're entertaining enough that you can put us on any time, any place, any galaxy, even Adam, and yeah, someone will be able to glean some from it.
Just hit shuffle, and you'll get stuff from before the last presidential election, stuff from now, stuff.
John and I talk about how boring the new hot water music is. People punching holes in their walls, getting angry.
So yeah, do we have a favorite? Do you have a favorite episode? Every once in a while, we have one that we record that we finish, and I'm like wow, we were on point there. Like nothing meandered. The conversation went really well. We talked about interesting things, and then I never make note of which ones those are, and they are it's tears and rain. I have no idea where they've gone.
The best podcast we ever do is the next one. Always the next one. But no, I agree. There's definitely times where we get down and boy, that was a lot of fun. And I usually say, I like it. We should do a drinking podcast more often. And then they're like, Tom, you're the only one who's drinking. I'm like, oh, still, it was fun.
It's fun for us, fun for them, though. Also, Adam, nice Blade Runner reference there. I appreciated that.
I missed that, Adam. Sorry.
Tom.
Adam, you were supposed to say, I'm usually drinking, too.
I was going to talk about the C-beams burning off the... I haven't been drinking as much on the podcast lately, and I feel like I should. I got to get my
game. You're better
back
than me, Adam? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't. It's really more a matter of me being a really I think compared to most adults my age, I have the worst stocked liquor cabinet or situation.
Oh
ever.
Yeah, me too. That's how
I know people that like legitimately like they seem to collect good whiskey or something, where you'll the rare occasion I'm at one of their houses or something like that, they're like, here's our 16 cool bottles of whiskey, do you want to try one of them? And I'm like, you know what's in our liquor cabinet right now? I have a bottle of creme de menthe that I only own because
everybody has that.
Well, yeah, because yeah. My grandmother died, and at one point we had to divvy up the spare liquor that was in her house, and that was among them. So that's why we own that.
Every time you drink it, it brings a slight tear to your eye.
I don't drink it. I'm sure there is a bottle of vermouth in there that, of course, no one's going to fucking touch because it's vermouth. There's for some reason a bottle of something. Something disgusting that teenagers would drink, and I don't know if it is
peach schnapps.
Well, it's like creme de menthe or Fireball or something. Not creme de menthe. Oh, no, not creme de menthe. Like, what is it? It's Fireball or Sourpuss or one of those disgusting things. I don't know why we own it, but again, no one drinks it because it's there.
By the side of the road.
God, I don't know. Like, and that's it. Like, it's the things we don't drink, because if we have a bottle of something that we want to drink, we will generally
drink it. Yeah.
And then it's gone.
Those people who have the really stock liquor cabinets, those are people who enjoy buying it more than drinking it.
I think those are people
because
who don't have
kids. If you
buy
a bottle of good whiskey, you're going to have a glass or two a night until it's gone. Right.
Well, like, I think like the money that I have to spend to like feed and clothe my kids, these people are turning around and putting into the liquor store. That's what they're doing.
Well, here's the thing, Adam. You can drink out of bargain. You know, I sitting next to me right now have two tall cans of Miller High Life, champagne. Which I bought for $1. Yeah, the champagne and beer. Exactly. Beers, I bought for $1 and some odd cents each. And unfortunately, the second one will be pretty warm by the time I'm done with it. But you know, these are first world problems, right?
I got nothing. I have a yellow High Life.
How's your iced tea, John? You're drinking iced tea tonight or lemonade?
John left.
John's dead.
John walked out on the podcast because we were talking about liquor.
He's so disgusted with us. But seriously, what happened to John?
John's gone. Huh. Shit. All right. Okay. We're taking over. So But yeah.
Now so that old man Gentile's not around, we can really have some fun, Adam. That's so, what we always say when you're gone.
When I'm gone, you say now that old man Gentile's.
We say now that old man Adam White's gone, we can really have some fun.
But I can't think of what like a particular favorite episode of this podcast has been to me because I'm not making note of them. We should keep some sort of like hall of fame.
Don't you find it's not, you know, these big, we tend to do big ones for the 50s, which is fine and which is fun, but those are never my favorites. It's always the ones where we just seem to roll and we just have fun and we just harp on something. We have a reoccurring theme that we go back to, whether it makes sense or not. And it's just sort of these non sequitur, just three guys shooting the shit episodes. Those are usually my favorite to listen to and to make.
Well, this is going to be one of those right now.
Two guys shooting the shit.
Yeah, because the third is gone.
I think John is actually, I believe that John right now is speed listening to the last 100 podcasts, trying to find his favorite one to answer this guy's questions, because that's his level of dedication to the listener.
So now I feel like we can't keep reading mail because the mail goes to John.
True. Now what, Adam?
Now what do we? What do
I
we do?
We're have some fun, but really we're sort of rudderless.
Well, shit. Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I am going to, since we are rudderless, I want to talk about a piece of music. I'm gonna play that piece of music, and then we're gonna come back and find out where the fuck John went. Because so that's what we're gonna do. So I want to talk about a band that I'm a huge fan of here. That is from Vancouver, BC. They're called Chain Whip. They're members of a bunch of other BC local bands that that I really like. It has Josh Nickel from a band called Fashionism on vocals. Josh also runs a record label called Neon Taste. If you know Fashionism, you may have heard of a band called like the Newtown Animals or Jeffy Genetic and his clones, the Transmitters. It's the same vocalist kind of sings in all those bands. Well, anyways. Josh plays in Fashionism. He's on lead vocals here in Chain Whip. It's got Joel Butler, who plays in Nervous Talk and Corner Boys on guitar, Brett Thompson from a band called Stress Eating on bass, and then Patrick Bertrand, who's in Corner Boys and also runs Hosehead Records on drums. Four-piece band. They play hardcore, but they play hardcore with an almost like goofy level of abandon. Like these guys, all of them, especially Patrick and especially Josh, they're huge early punk nerds. Both of their labels and both of the other kind of music that they put out is all of this great like throwback 70s stuff. These are guys that have like an encyclopedic knowledge of punk rock and what was going on in their local scene in particular. So they're playing this very like early 80s hardcore, a mix of this like early Californian adolescence kind of styles. You've got like the DOA cropping up in there, of course, because of the Vancouver influence. There's these like, you know, 82 UK, like super combative stuff that shows up in there. And they play it with just a level of goofiness that is wonderful. Like they do not shy away at all from trying to be like as tough and fast as they possibly can. And there's no pretense that they are, you know, trying to make high art or anything like that. So it's great. Chain Whip is super fun. So I'm going to play a track that is an exclusive track that's actually going to premiere on some party of my newsletter in a few days, but I'll play it here first. So this is a track that is off their upcoming record. The record is called 14 Lashes. And the song I'm going to play is called Crawl Space Boyfriend. I am pretty sure it is under a minute long, which is what you want from this kind of band. And here you go. This is Chain Whip out of Vancouver. The record that this comes from, 14 Lashes, comes out on August 31st, I think. So here you go. You'll never be mine. All right, we're back. That was Chain Whip. And little do you know, listener, but we've been sitting here for 20 minutes as John has vanished from the internet mid show. So we're just gonna pick up and tread water and do a little bit without him, and maybe he will be able to come back to us.
So, maybe we should have left the recording running yet, and we could have would have been intriguing. Our listeners would get to pull back the curtain and listen to you and I talk about the weather and whether or not we're too old to go to all day festivals and other extremely interesting things that I'm sure they would have loved to hear about.
But there was that
loss.
That great part where I thought about going to get a drink and then I didn't,
or texting your wife to bring you a drink. Yes,
yeah, I didn't even do that. So anyways,
if I would have known we were going to have that break, I would have definitely left my second beer in the fridge because I just popped it and it's definitely warmer than I would have liked.
Well, I'm glad I did it all, boys. Hey, I'm glad I caused whatever misery I can. So, ha!
John, what the fuck? Where'd you go?
John had to kill a homeless person quick, but now he's back.
See, Skype, as part of Apple's ever-arching plan to control all humanity and basically make every world a Matrix/Terminator world, they make you update their software all the time, even though you don't want to. Yep. And I never do, but the result is it craps out a lot if you don't update the software. And I think that's what happened.
There you go.
John,
Skype is a Microsoft product, but whatever.
Bow to your Skype master. Stop being difficult.
All right, John, we are all tired and ornery. So here's what happened. We read the one letter. We talked about Chain Whip. I played a Chain Whip song. And now we are going to blast through some stories before me and Tom fall asleep.
I'm glad you came back, because next we were actually going to whip each other with chains.
This is going to be a whole theme show. So Vivian Girls have reunited. The band's lineup is going to be Cassie Ramone, Katie Goodman, and Allie Kohler. They're going to release a new album soon called Memory. It comes out September 20th on Polyvinyl. You can check out the title track, You can check out the song Sick, which is the first track from that record, over on Bandcamp right now. Vivian Girls, John, band that you are famously, well, I don't know famously, but you're a fan of. You've been championing those girls for years. And I have to say, I've long time been a fan myself, so this is cool news.
This is great news. It comes at the perfect time. Katie Goodman had been doing La Sera. La Sera is great, but I think La Sera had done what it can do at this time period. I'm not saying La Sera is done forever, but I think maybe it's time to put them to rest, bring back Vivian Girls. Wonderful thing about Vivian Girls, similar to Sleep, in that like when they're separate, each member is like what they add completely solidified, like completely pure. So Cassie Ramone is the cosmic heaviness, where Katie Goodman is kind of the more singer, songwriter, pop influence side. But when they come together, it's that magical combination. Vivian Girls, they were probably the first blog buzz band, and they reaped the rewards of that early on, and then the detriments of that for the next 5 to 8 years. And they got so much undue hatred and so much undue criticism. And they, if people remember, for a while people were putting like sexy pictures of them up online, like against their will. Like people were like covertly taking sexy pictures of them and putting them on blogs, namely Hipster Runoff, which was like really lame. But so these girls have really, taken a lot of damage simply because people love them. And then, mean blogs are kind of over with now, I think, corresponding to the 80 Mean zine. But the Vivian Girls really bore the brunt of that. And I think that is one of the things that led to them breaking up. I'm excited that they're back together. One of the hurdles that they've always faced was their first album was very distinctive. And so when you have a very distinctive sounding record, you really only have two options. Do I make a record that's exactly the same or something that's radically different? And they kind of did radically different each time. The new track, I dig it a lot. It's kind of like the first album, but maybe a little bit more mature, a little bit longer, a little bit more sonic texture to it. I'm excited. This is great. This is the perfect time for this. I rep Vivian Girls big time, baby.
I feel like I was really into their first record. I was a little bit less into Share the Joy than I was a self-titled. And then I have zero recollection.
Share the Joy, the third record.
Share the Joy to the third. Which one is the second?
Second one is Everything's Gone Wrong, which is good. I love Share the Joy. That actually might be my favorite one. That's the most diverse one. The second one is Everything's Gone Wrong, which is kind of them finding their footing after the Dynamite first record.
So hold on. What am I thinking of here? Share the Joy, third record. Yes. Recognize the cover art. This is a really interesting part of the show where I look at Wikipedia and try to remember records that I like. Maybe it is the third one that I fell off on. There was what there the two records other than their first. I feel like I somehow unhyped myself and got distracted and didn't pay as much attention to them, and I probably should have, because that first record is killer.
Now, and one other thing, here's a hurdle, where as journalists, how should we address this? People were brutal on Cassie Ramone's voice. They say she can't sing, she's a horrible singer. And first of all, she's an amazing singer, but she's a very unique singer. But no one dogged on Kurt Cobain for not being able to sing. No one dogged on Perry Farrell for not being able to sing. So it was very sexist in that Cassie Ramone wasn't singing like
both those people can sing, though, John.
But not really. I mean, Kurt Cobain can't really sing, you know.
Sure, he could. He could hold a tune. He had a raspy voice, but he could carry a tune.
All right, fine. Then Joe Strummer can't sing. You know what I mean?
All right, that might be a better example.
You know,
Bob Dylan, dude. Bob Dylan can't sing.
There you go. So, anyways, the point being is, Cassie Ramone was getting so much undue hatred, and I think the internet has kind of corrected itself, and that I don't think they have to fear that now because honestly, at the beginning, it was always guys reviewing her and giving her those nasty reviews. But then it was women after that, which I thought was kind of weird. And Lacerre actually got a brutally mean review once from a woman writer, which I guess you shouldn't judge something on someone's gender, but still, it seemed weird. Anyways, the point being is, one of the hurdles that the band and us as writers and journalists will have to consider is the story of Vivian Girls isn't that they're victims. The story of Vivian Girls is that they're an amazing band and they're back together. So how much of that do you address now that they've reunited, because their breakup was in part effectuated by the relentless criticism they got on the second and especially third record, which was mostly undeserved.
I feel that the criticism that they may have been hit with at the time, it feels very time and place on the internet. Like, until you brought it up, I didn't even remember that they hit any kind of backlash. I just remembered
brutal.
Like, it just like as soon as this story popped up, I was just like, oh yeah, I loved that first. I loved that Vivian Girls record, right? Like that was my reaction to it. So, it doesn't feel like that would happen these days.
Yeah, I think so. And honestly, that's kind of for the better, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like people might say, oh, it's not a good record, which I think it will be a great record, but they won't take petty attacks that actually don't come from a valid place.
Yeah, you pretty much, if you come at it from a sexist angle nowadays, you're going to get shamed out of the business, practically, I would think. The business that is this.
I will say, Punk News, historically, and has always taken a very strong stance against that one specific issue, and not to pat ourselves on the back, but Punk News has done a really good job fighting that aspect with regards to the Vivian Girls and other bands as well. In part because we have women writers, which is good.
I do not know their music very much. I mean, is their first record like their punk record?
Yeah, well, all their records are pretty punk records. The first one especially.
Well, but I'm listening to this new song, and I of course, you're a big fan of like 80s new wave type of music, but I was trying to think of like what the male equivalent of this would be, and if you'd be into it, you know, like, are you into like Jesus Mary Chain?
Actually, not really, but I can see the connection to Vivian Girls, and I love Vivian Girls. But
you obviously have a soft spot for this band, and I'm trying to peel back the layers of onions that
John
Gentile and try to figure out what because I think you would like this if it were, because in my mind, I'm wondering if this was a band from New York and it was all males, if you would like it.
Well, the answer is probably not. However, their perspective would not be the same. Vivian Girls have a very unique lyrical perspective, and that's informed in part because they're women, which I think is
true. And they're a Philadelphia band, which, I mean, that's okay. I mean, it's okay if you...
They're not a Philadelphia band.
Oh, are they?
They're from Brooklyn and now L.A.
Oh, are they? Oh, they're from New York. They are from New York. Okay,
meanwhile, I will point out, Katie Goodman, extremely cool with Punk News. We've done about 3 or 4 interviews with her. Cassie Ramone, extremely cool with Punk News. She played the Punk News Holiday Spectacular with Joe Jack Talcum and Colleen Green, and she was amazing. So both very cool people.
Hmm.
So speaking of very cool people, Danzig. We're talking about Danzig.
That's my Danzig and O.G. Simpson. Nice choices, guys.
All right, so the Misfits have they keep announcing shows. They've got another one coming up. This is a big one. This is a New York City one where they're playing Madison Square Garden Saturday, October 19th, 2019. They have Rancid and the Damned opening that show. Tickets are on sale tomorrow, July 19th. Yeah, so.
I think they already sold out. Did they? Actually, they did. We are correct. I'll tell you how, and I hate this. I hate this. Tickets are on sale July 19, but so many different credit cards have pre-sales. It sold out in the pre-sale.
That happens a lot.
So anyways, now, John, you've seen one of these Misfits reunions. Tom, have you?
I have not, no. I saw Danzig and Doyle play some Misfits songs, and I saw the Scab Misfits a couple times, but no, I have not seen this.
So we've gone over the issue of the fact that these things are, you know, are expensive and are big and potentially, you know, potentially contrary to the whole spirit of being able to go see a punk band play. But we'll put that aside because we've kind of beat that into the ground. But
we'll put that aside. You could put it aside if you want to, Adam.
Well, I don't want to like debate like, oh, the tickets were $300 because, yeah, we've talked about that. So I want to look at this more from the standpoint of the venue and all that. So, Tom, John, you know, red-blooded Americans, I have to imagine that you take a certain amount of pride in Madison Square Garden, that like it is an internationally renowned place. Like, I know about it, and I live up here in fucking Kanuckistan. So, Is this a big deal? Is this that plan?
If you had to point to the exact moment that the Misfits jumped the shark, it actually wouldn't be this. It would have been like 25 years ago. But still, it bothered me less when they played New Jersey. But it speaks to two things: A, that they're a mainstream band now. I mean, officially, right?
I don't know if you can. Is Iron Maiden mainstream?
Yes.
I don't even know. I agree with that.
I don't know that Iron Maiden would sell. I don't know that Iron Maiden would sell Madison Square Garden that fast. Honestly,
they play Madison Square Garden,
but it's like, you know, you hang around long enough, you become legit. Even the Misfits, and but yeah, I don't know. I can't get over the first point you made, Adam. The not even the cost of it, but to me, it's just that's not how you're supposed to see the Misfits play, and all these VIP and all this. I hate all this VIP and all this classism and punk rock. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the guy who gets there earliest and works hardest to get up front, you know? And I know they do have some general admission, but I skipped it when they did Chicago, and I don't know, man, it's not for me. If I was going to spend $300, I'd rather go see 20 great bands at $15 a pop and drink $4 PBRs instead of $14 Ham's Special Light or whatever they sell at Madison Square Garden.
Ham's Special Light.
All those New Yorkers, right? They're all lighting the loafers. They drink Ham's Special Light.
Ham's a Boston beer, isn't it?
I have no idea.
Ham is a pork product, John.
Also delicious.
Not necessarily what you want.
Better than the beer, even maybe.
So, I don't want to, when I say brush aside, I mean, I didn't really, I mean, we can continue to be outraged at that. I just don't know if we have any more gas in the tank.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Adam. Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So, that's where Hams is from. So there's a Misfit show that nobody can go to. So that's too bad. Where are we?
It's not a matter, like I said, like, hey, it's not a matter of can't, you know, and John and I, we just talked about this a little bit off the air, so to speak. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, self-discipline, or how much money you're going to spend on this, or, you know, we could do lots of things, but you still pick and choose, you know.
Where are they in the count right now? Because was there not something about them playing 10 shows and
12
then
or something? They've been on, or 11th or 12th?
Yeah.
Over the 10. They have more than the 10 announced.
As John stated, that one document that everyone was referring to, this is the smoking gun, proven false. This is show 11 or 12, because there's even another one announced somewhere.
They're doing LA again, right?
Yeah, that's right. So they
They're doing Cycle Las Vegas. They're replacing
Megadeth. Yeah. Which is
Dave, I thought Mustaine has Dave Mustaine as the cancer.
I thought Misfits were like way bigger than Megadeth money wise in 2019. You know?
Yeah, because Megadeth's not selling at Madison Square Garden.
No, so
Megadeth plays like the secondary hockey rinks, like the, you know, the 5,000 seat hockey rink.
Yeah.
Or 10,000. I don't know. I like Megadeth, but man, they have watered down their catalog so much over the years.
I don't know how them releasing a split 7-inch with Less Than Jake a few years ago didn't catapult them back up into Superstar.
Did they really happen?
I own it. There is a Less Than Jake Megadeth 7-inch.
What's the Megadeth song?
Give me 2 seconds and I will grab it from this shelf. I'm pretty sure it only exists because they were both on Capitol Records at one point or something like that. But hold on, let me find
out. Is it like She's Gonna Break Soon on the Less Than Jake side?
No, it's older than that.
Adam, can you identify the other Less Than Jake thrash metal connection?
Off the top of my head, no.
Slayer. They covered Slayer and did a Slayer EP.
Really? A whole EP?
No. Well, 2 tracks, a single.
Okay. What did they do? Let me guess. Raining Blood and Die by the Sword.
It was two earlier things. I can't remember which two songs. I mean, I don't remember that much about Less Than Jake. Proudly.
You guys talk for a sec. I'm going to see how well alphabetized my records are here.
This show has basically been two people killing time while the other one did something different.
Thomas, speaking of ska, I saw Mighty Mighty Boston for the first time this past weekend.
Yep.
At Bouncing Souls Home for the Summer.
Okay.
F'd up played. They were awesome. Leftover Crack played. They were cool. Bouncing Souls played. They were cool. And honestly, Tom, I was definitely a hater of Mighty Mighty Boston before seeing them play. Like they're a cheesy ska band. I'm like, this is going to be stupid.
They wear the suits and everything.
I watched them play. Tom, I went from being a hater to being like, it's just fun. And if you're just hating on fun,
it is fun.
Then you're a dick. I mean, it was fun.
I feel about all ska bands, honestly. I will not listen to a ska record in my house, but I don't mind if there's like 3 punk bands, I don't mind having a ska band on the bill just to kind of break up the monotony of it and get you, you know, like a little more fun. So you are not a Bouncing Souls fan, right, John?
No, I'm a neutral. I'm not a hater. I'm not a fan.
So you did enjoy them, though?
I enjoyed them. I wasn't amazed.
They usually play the vast majority of the stuff they play is from the early 2000s still to this day. And the singer over the years has become less of a punk singer and more of a, I don't know the way
singer,
the way that he sings kind of bothers me now. It's like he has like a skinny microphone and sort of holds it too far from his head. It's like, I still, you know, to me, you still want that, like that Henry Rollins, who's basically like chewing on his microphone and, you know, like wielding it like a second fist, you know, or something. And the Bouncing Souls over the years have just gotten away from that, even though the band still kicks butt. I think the band is good.
I think they're really into technique, you know, and sounding good. And also, like, as Dave Vanian, like, if you go see The Damned, Dave Vanian doesn't sing quite as hard as he did on those early records. And I think the reason is because he's trying to save his voice.
Yeah, and I think there's probably some of that to it, yeah.
However, The Damned, at least lately, have played with so much energy. Even though Vanian isn't quite as hard, it's still amazing.
Yeah, they're really great.
I think Bouncing Souls are trying to protect their skill or their health or however you want to phrase that, you know, as opposed to Danzig, who is pretty much totally blown out. You know what I mean?
The Bouncing Souls, I would assume, are about my age, mid 40s. Not sure, though. The Bouncing Souls have a really impressive tour coming around for their 30th anniversary. They have a nice selection of bands playing with them, and they're doing Detroit and Chicago, but I am not going to make it. It just doesn't work out schedule-wise for me.
I'm looking at this 7-inch that Adam's talking about.
Yeah, so it's All My Best Friends Are Metalheads, which were on Less Than Jake's 98 record, and The Disintegrators by Megadeth, which was off their 97 record, Cryptic Writings. But they were both on Capitol at the time, so I'm sure those bands have never actually talked to each other.
That might be worth a buck or two. I mean, I can't imagine it's a promo thing, right?
It's worth $10 exactly.
Yeah, well, that's not terrible. That Cryptic Writings, man, that was one of the worst Megadeth albums. Risk was probably the worst Megadeth album, but Cryptic Writings was pretty bad too. Had a couple of
Less Than Jake covered Evil Has No Boundaries and Antichrist, just so you know.
Oh, real early stuff. Nice.
However, the B-side plays from the inside out in a tribute backwards playing, which is amusing.
I have some records like that. You got any of those?
I don't think so.
Have you gotten any of these records, the trend where they like cut the words out of the records? Like these lathe cut records or whatever, where they're not lathe cut, but they like press words out of them. So it'll be a 12 inch, but it'll really play more like a 7 inch.
Oh yeah. I hate that, honestly.
Well, but the problem is with a lot of them now, there's no standard size. And if you're trying to, you can't use an automatic turntable. Yeah. So I hate the fact that I had to like hold the thing over and try to find the groove. And if you miss it, it starts whacking on the holes and it's too fancy records, guys, too fancy records.
So anyways, back to whatever was on our schedule. So there is a new Slater Kinney song that people may want to go check out. It is the title track from their new record. It is called The Center Will Not Hold, or The Center Won't Hold. It has a video that is animated and you can go find on YouTube. This is all from a record that comes out on the 16th of August. Now, we've been talking about Slater Kinney a lot because, like I said, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that their drummer, Janet Weiss, left the band. There has been all sorts of controversy over whether she left the band because of the I don't know if diminished is the right word, but the change in her role in the band's sound, given that they're working with kind of like St. Vincent as a very prominent uber producer on this record, how much that had to do with it. There have been statements that have kind of come out in the time since we last talked about this. Carrie Brownstein responded on Facebook to someone about Janet leaving and gave some opinions on it. But anyway, so, you know, opinions and back and forth and speculation aside, here's a new piece of music, and it is definitely in the vein of this potentially more electronic and produced direction for this band. And I'm curious, John, like, does this maintain the theory that the big awesome rock drummer decided that she didn't want to be part of this crew anymore because they're not making big awesome rock records? Or
I think you don't even need to say anything else, Adam. I think that's exactly it. If you listen to this record, there's really like nothing for the drummer to do on this record. I mean, it's nearly all electronic drums, or if it's not electronic drums, it's nominal organic drums, just to fill in. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but I'm saying this is what it sounds like. Slater Kinney playing a St. Vincent song doesn't sound like Slater Kinney. And I can understand how a band would want to change, but I can also understand how the drummer said, I feel like I'm getting squeezed out. We brought in a super producer to give us direction, and that direction means I don't really do anything, or if I do anything, it's pretty nominal, and I'm not going to write anything. I think this track's biggest crime is that it starts sounding interesting. It's got this big, you know, spacious sound. It's got a threatening sound to it, but it never picks up. It's just kind of the same thing for the next 2.5 minutes. It never really goes anywhere. So I think the biggest crime is not that it's different. I think the biggest crime is that it's different, but it's not fully realized. I had one other thing that I wanted to say. Oh, one other thing is, to me, this sounds like a record label saying, okay, older legacy act, we want you to make a hit new sound recording that's not a complete sellout pop record, but it's somewhat avant-garde, but it's somewhat pop influence. And I feel like some other, like, kind of happened to Tegan and Sarah with their last record. I feel like this is a sound mandated upon a band rather than a band organically growing to the space. That's what I feel like.
I don't know if I buy that it's mandated, but I could definitely buy that it's a choice that a few of the members would have made because let's say their own personal interests are maybe starting to trump whatever the band meant collectively. Like if the other two thirds of Slater Kinney are, you know, big St. Vincent fans, are friends with St. Vincent, are really into that, they may have had more interest in going in this direction than just, you know, cranking out another rock record, especially given that they're in their like reunion phase of their career anyways. Like this is kind of the second go around for the band in the first place. So I wonder if they approached it being like, you know what, this is where our current interests lie. Like, we don't want to make a rock record. And that just didn't line up. I don't know. I hate putting words in people's mouths, but here's a song. Go listen to the song. Tommy, anything to chip in here?
You know, I've never been a big Sleater-Kinney fan. I'm not that familiar with their work, but yeah, this new record is definitely not going to get me in the fold. The drumming on this song sounds like, you know, John Henry was a steel driving man, like someone is pounding in railroad ties with a sledgehammer. That's what the drumming sounds like, or the percussion or whatever. Just, yeah, it's not for me. But maybe, I don't know, who knows, maybe they see an opportunity to make a living playing music where they couldn't before or something. Who knows? Maybe they're making that grasp for the brass ring, you know? I don't know. Or maybe this is the record they wanted to make. And they've been, and they never had the budget to, or so, who knows?
Whenever I have such a hard time grasping the brass ring argument in any context in
musically,
musically in 2019. Cause like, let's say they did make a record that completely appealed to, you know,
the pitchfork crowd.
Is there even any money there these days? Like,
be able to get on like a Chevy commercial or something.
Like, is there like, I listen to too many bands that like, you know, only play on weekends and can't afford to do anything else than that. But yeah. Is there any money anywhere for any of these bands, even the big ones? Like, it's not the 90s anymore.
Not to go back to Tegan and Sarah, but they got a new record coming out in like 2 months. They're not even doing pre-orders. They're saying pre-save it on Spotify. So when it's released, you can hear it automatically on Spotify.
They're not even trying to sell units.
They're not even trying anymore. So the answer is no, you know.
What's amazing now when you see that this some big band, and I know there more records are selling than ever. I get that. Record sales are up 200% year over year. But, you know, you'll see a big band and they'll press 1,000 copies of on vinyl. They're still selling more CDs and the vast majority are still downloads, you know. I'm talking big bands doing like 1,000 copies.
No, downloads have plummeted. Streaming has overtaken downloads by far.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I'm not used to downloads yet, let alone streaming. I'm old. I sit in my house and I listen to things that are made of plastic or vinyl or whatever.
Hey, you guys want to hear a funny story? And I'm not making fun of it. So as part of my job, I visit what's called incapacitated people. That is people that have a guardian, adults, 18-year-old plus. And yeah. I visited one guy and I'm talking to his parents and they're like, yeah, he loves CDs. We're trying to get him to stream so we don't have these CDs all over the house. But and this guy had severe autism. He's good. He loves CDs. He won't stop listening to CDs. And I'm like, I love CDs too. And they genuinely thought I was making fun of him when I was like, no, I actually like CDs.
Oh, John.
That's, you know, obviously the exception to the rule, right?
Steve Ignorant, Adam. I'm excited. He's going on tour. Steve Ignorant is going on a tour in the UK. It's a short tour. It's only about a week long in 2020. And he's going to do all Crass songs. He's done that a little bit. He's done that twice before. And he also did a short tour where he did basically his favorite songs, Crass and non-Crass. You know, 10 years ago, there was all this hubbub about Steve Ignorant doing Crass. Everyone was all upset and saying, Steve Ignorant shouldn't do Crass. Crass is over. This is exploitation. As we've discussed, there's basically no money in music at all. I've seen Steve Ignorant do all Crass in San Francisco. It was amazing. I wish I saw him in Punk Rock going last year, do like the Steve Ignorant's favorite stuff last year. So I really hope he brings this to North America. He probably won't just because it costs so much money to get here. But if he does, I will definitely be there. Meanwhile, Crass finally remastered Best Before 1984. As with the other Crass Crassical Collection reissues, it's astounding. If you are even moderately a Crass fan, you owe it to yourself to go out and get those remasters. And the Best Before 1984 is a great place to start. The improvement in sound quality is amazing, absolutely amazing. I support Steve Ignorant. And honestly, for a little while, people were dogging on Steve Ignorant, saying, no, Penny Rimbaud, he's really Crass. Penny is. Steve, just some schmuck. I'm glad that opinion is kind of fading away and people are again seeing Crass as a group effort, but principally driven by Steve Ignorant, who started the band, and Penny Rimbaud, rather than Penny Rimbaud as a deity. And I like Penny Rimbaud, I'm not dissing on Penny, but I'm glad Steve's getting his due, it seems like.
I would definitely go check that out if it was convenient.
It's awesome, man. I saw it in like 2010 in San Francisco. They did like 40 songs. It was amazing.
2010. God, John, that's going on a decade ago now.
I know.
All right, John, why don't you play a piece of music, if you will, and then we'll keep rolling.
Okay, listen, one of my all-time favorite bands has teamed up with one of my a band I enjoy quite a bit. The Melvins just recently released a collaborative EP with Flipper.
I thought you were going to say less than Jake and Metallica. I'm
like, you bastard. Side A is Melvins and Flipper doing a brand new song and doing a new cover of Sacrifice. Melvin famously covered Sacrifice in 1988, I think it was, on Lysol. It's a new recording of Sacrifice. And the flip side is just Melvins covering two Flipper tracks. Do you guys want to hear Melvins and Flipper doing a new song called Hot Fish, or Melvins and Flipper covering the Flipper classic and Buzz Osborne's favorite Flipper song, Sacrifice?
I'd rather hear Sacrifice. But
Sacrifice it is, by the Melvins and Flipper together again, at last. On Amphetamine Reptile Records. Get the CDs, only $5.
right, we're back. All right, John, let's pick and choose which of these stories we're going to talk about here. We got a bunch of short little weird ones. We got some media to talk about. We got some Hawkwind. So what are we going to do? We're going to cut the Hawkwind.
Yeah, we can cut Hawkwind. I mean, I want to talk about Ceremony the most. Anything else I can give or take?
Oh, I wasn't actually telling you to cut the Hawkwind. I thought you were gonna fight that. You can keep the.
But honestly, Adam, there's a new Hawkwind record literally every other month. I'm not even kidding, and we'll talk about this sometime again soon, probably. Although actually, the record was pretty surprisingly good, to tell you the truth. Oh, I was talking about it, it's got Shatner on it. Man, I'm so sick of Shatner. Let's talk about Hawkwind real quick. So Hawkwind is it. Hawkwind has released an album, but it's not actually Hawkwind. The main driving force between Hawkwind is a guy called Dave Brock. And much like Greg Ginn, he says, I did everything. I'm the mastermind. Everyone else is just the hangers-on. And everyone else in the band hates his guts. It's a mirror parallel to Greg Ginn. And of course, Greg Ginn radically changed and invented punk rock. Dave Brock radically changed and invented space rock. That being said, he's not the only secret ingredient. So all the guys that are alive that still hate Dave Brock and some that aren't still alive got together and recorded an album called Hawkestral, which is a lot of Hawkwind adjacent and Hawkwind former Hawkwind members. It's got Lemmy on, who of course passed away, but also founding member Nick Turner, Ginger Baker of Creen, who was in Hawkwind for a while, Alan Davey and Simon House, and Hugh Lloyd Langdon. Heard about Hawkwind. Also, Shatner's on it, which is really annoying. I wanted to tell you guys to listen to the Shatner track because it's really disturbing, but I forgot. Anyways,
what's the Lemmy track? I mean, was it recorded live or was it recorded before or what was the
I don't know, but ostensibly this project's been in the work for a while because he actually has a vocal track on it, and it's not like a song from somewhere else.
Lemmy has a vocal track on it.
Yeah. So
nice.
I guess they recorded it for this. I couldn't say, you know. Anyway, this record is cool. It's a melange, but they bring in Shatner, and honestly, like Shatner's so annoying, and he kind of takes you out of the world. Like you're in Hawkwind, you're flying through space, and then Shatner and his terrible acting shows up, and he starts singing about orgasms, and I do not want to hear. There's one person
83-year-old man talking about orgasms.
There's one thing I don't want to hear about singing about orgasms. It's William Shatner. I'll tell you so.
There's only one 80-year-old man I want to hear talk about orgasms, and that's Nick Turner.
Exactly.
So anyway, not William Shatner.
That really pulls me out of the Hawkwind adventure. But anyway, this record is cool. If you like Hawkwind, check it out. You'll dig it.
I'm going to actually Google the song about Shatner talking about orgasms. Color me fascinated.
You see, and here I sat and sat through this 8 minutes of quasi Hawkwind space rock earlier, thinking, I don't hear William Shatner at all. I don't get where he is. He was not on that track. So what the fuck, John? You owe me. Eight I should have played
that. It's 8 minutes. You never had back.
I should have played that instead of the Melvins. Shatner singing it out.
All right. Turns out we did talk about Hawkwind. So let's talk about Ceremony here. So there is a new video from the band out. It is for the song In the Spirit World Now. Singer Ross Farrar released the statement with the video. He said, the spirit world came about through a reading of Saul Bellow's Humboldt's Gift. The novel's fictitious character, von Humboldt Fleischer, writes a long letter to the protagonist, Charlie Citrine, which announces, we are not natural beings, but supernatural beings. I understand that is a moment of praise and ran away with it. So that's his statement. That's what he had to say about this song. The song is going to be on an album of the same name, which is coming out on August 23rd on Relapse. John, you've been beating the Ceremony drum for a long time, or at least interested in the Ceremony saga up until now. What's your read on this one?
I'm a big Ceremony fan. Like many Ceremony fans, I was disappointed with L-Shaped Man and somewhat disappointed with Zoo. Ceremony's classic response, and actually Ceremony, like the dog on Ceremony, so we want you to play punk. You're a punk or a hardcore band. You're a bunch of phonies. And Ceremony has actually become outwardly combative of that. Like the press release said, don't ask them about punk and hardcore. They don't want to talk about it, which is the most combative press release I've ever seen, I think, so far. But I think the crime is not, and not that it's a crime, it's not that Zoo and L-Shaped Man weren't hardcore punk. It's that L-Shaped Man was kind of boring. Now, I commend them for taking a risk. I'm all about bands taking a risk. And sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, L-Shaped Man was a little boring. And actually, I'm going to dog on Ceremony a little bit more before I praise them. The reason why Ceremony is a special hardcore and punk band is because they're not just a hardcore and punk band. They're willing to take risks. They're willing to be artsy-fartsy, which I like. They're willing to do weird stuff. The other aspect of that is, you know, everything is so, like, almost, I want to say heavy-handed. It's like just because you've read some semi-obscure fiction or I'm thinking of another guy that was in a doctoral program. Just because you know some obscure reference or semi-obscure reference that's considered not obscure in your little world circle, like, just referencing it, that doesn't make the song clever or good. Your song, and I see this a lot with I guess punk guys or even indie guys that take doctoral programs, especially in literature and poetry. It's like just referencing someone else's work isn't in of itself that interesting. You have to make it interesting on your own and not rely on them as much, you know. And the last Ceremony album, it was the concept album of a breakup. And I gotta say, I don't really care about people breaking up at my age. Like, don't give me an album about your breakup, because I just don't care. There's way worse tragedies in the world than that, you know. And so I think the problem with Ceremony to a degree is that maybe they've gotten a little too artsy fartsy. Like, just referencing this book doesn't make it clever. Like, you can reference anything, and unless you're bringing something special to the mix, then you're just being not original. You know what I mean? That being said, after I've dissed the band for the last 5 minutes, I dug this new track. And actually, I think this is the exact they released one single from this album before I thought it was a little boring. This track is kind of like a dark wave, dark new wave track. I really dug this. All the commenters hate it. But I'm like, yeah, like, this is what they should be doing. Dark, catchy, new wave. I know they don't want to be a hardcore band anymore, but I want some grit. I want some darkness. I want some sinisterism in their music. I want some threat in their music. And this had all of that. And I think this is the neat way to go. They're very influenced by, like, the 80s, you know, goth guys, Bauhaus. They're very influenced by Sister Mercy, Joy Division, New Order. They're influenced by all that. I think this is what I want to hear. Give it a little bit of oomph, goof, give it a little bit of pop, and then we've got something interesting. And that's this here. I dig this track.
I've never followed Ceremony's saga, so I have no emotional whiplash from the various things that they've done or not done up until now. They're a band that but they're one of these bands that I think the more that I hear people complaining about the direction that they've gone in, the more I feel like I want to go back and listen to all their stuff, because that seems interesting to me. Because I'm into this. I mean, I like this. The weirdo new wave thing that they're doing, and that's more interesting to me than just hearing another early 2000s hardcore band. So I have no nostalgia for their earlier stuff, but I like this song in and of itself in isolation of that. So yeah, I should go do my Ceremony homework, eh?
Oh, Ceremony's great. I mean, Roanoke Park will probably always be their best record, and no shame in that, because it's one of my all-time favorite hardcore records. Top 20, probably, no question. The two records before that, like, are very hardcore, almost power violence, but not really. And what makes people so angry or so annoyed is, for a hot minute, Ceremony was kind of the kings of hardcore, or even verging on the power violence. And people said they're not true power violence, but they never claimed to be power violence, which they never were, really. But, like, for a hot minute, like, Ceremony was the hardcore band. And then I guess hardcore people saw them as turning their back on hardcore. But I think that was – because how many times can you make, like, a super great just standard hardcore record? Like, twice maybe, you know? And so I think to save themselves
– I think Madball would disagree with that.
Yeah, but they're not that kind of hardcore. They're hardcore punk hardcore. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think I think it was smart for them to evolve and change. And if the last two okay records are what it takes to make a cool, evil new wave record, I'm all for it.
So we had Young Gov in the docket right now, but I don't know if we want to come back to that one, because I feel like I could have, like, a cool extended conversation about the pop universe that Ben Cook inhabits. But we'll give it like a top of show space next week.
Sounds good.
I also say this because I have an email sitting here that's
famous last words
that has the whole record in there for promo. And I'm like, oh, I could go listen to the whole record and actually know what I'm talking about more. Because
what do you think of his hat, Adam? What do you think of his recent hat wear? He was wearing that at the effed up show at Bouncing Souls this past weekend.
I do not know which hat he was wearing in a different city.
He's got like, I call it a fisherman's hat, but it's got a name. It's like that big floppy hat that like goes all the way around your head, you know, and you can put like fishing lures in it if you want. Like it was big in the rave scene in the UK in the early 2000s. Mick Jones famously wore one for a little while.
It's like a bucket hat kind of thing. I don't know.
Is that what it's called? A bucket
hat? I'm not sure. There are many hats that could fit that thing. Well, I will find it. I'll research his hat. No, the reason I want to bump him is because I don't know how much you listened to Too Sad to Funk, which was the last record that he came out that he put out. But I am totally
Adam,
fucking.
I interviewed him about that album.
Perfect. So I think Too Sad to Funk is a fascinating piece of art, and just the whole weird arc that Ben Cook goes on, I think, deserves some space. So we'll talk about Ben Cook next week. In the meantime, jump to your next weird story here. We got two more. We want to talk about the Mecetics, and we want to talk about this one that you sprung on us here about Tupac.
You want me to read Adam, or you want to read Tupac?
You know what? I haven't even seen this Tupac story, so you read it, and I'll take it in.
All right, people say, what does this story have to do with punk? This story has absolutely nothing to do with punk, but it's just hilarious. Jerry Foxhoven is the director of the Iowa Department of Human Services. Adam and Tom, but especially Tom, Department of Human Services. Tom, how big of a state agency is a Department of Human Services generally?
I think big.
Huge. It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest.
I have kids. Fortunately, I've never had to get them involved. Isn't that who takes your kids away?
It is, but it's also Medicaid, Medicare regulation, nursing homes, all of that. DHS is huge. It's among the biggest, if not the biggest, department of any state. It's huge. Well, anyways, in Iowa, Jerry Foxhoven, who is 62, he's been running for the 65? Past
65.
65. Is he 65? Okay, whatever. 65. He was running it until he was asked to step down earlier last month. The reason he was asked to step down is he emailed all 4,300 employees of DHS and asked them to listen to Tupac to commemorate Tupac's birthday.
But he's denying that this was the reason he was fired.
The next day, he was asked to step down from his position, and he did. DHS/the state said vaguely, as the governor has said, a lot of factors contribute to the resignation of Jerry. And now Governor Reynolds is looking forward to taking DHS in a new direction. Jerry himself said he thought it was a coincidence. I'm not so sure. However, this is not an isolated incident. Associated Press was able to get 300 pages of emails of him emailing other DHS employees about how much he likes Tupac, including Tupac lyrics. His office with Tupac Fridays, where he would play nothing but Tupac music in his office all Friday long. And for his 65th birthday, he had Thug Life cookies made. And I don't know if this guy was like making fun of Tupac or this guy was a genuine Tupac fan. And that's my question.
I mean, what he would be taking it a little too far if he was making fun of him, wouldn't he? I mean, Tupac is officially Grandpa's rap band now, or Grandpa's rapper.
I mean, but I gotta say, I would hope the DHS would not be wasting their resources like this. And like, maybe he thought he was like the fun guy, but I just think this guy's kind of wacky. You know what I mean?
I love the picture of it because he literally does look like everybody's grandpa. He's just this white haired guy wearing like this generic gray or, you know, suit. And I love it. I don't know why. I think the story is funny as hell. It's one of my favorite stories we've run forever. Tupac died when he was, 22 years old. So this grandpa could jam out his. I would just love to see this old white guy singing some of those lyrics. I would love that, Jeff. I would love that.
Do you think this guy has a screw loose or he just really digs Tupac and that's it?
I don't know, but you know, I'm trying to think what the equivalent would be. Like if I were just, you know, as a guy in my mid-40s, what would I have to be into?
But it's not that you're just into it, Tom. It's that you're emailing employees.
Well, yeah, but exactly. But I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, so I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it. But it's just the last person you'd expect to listen to that, you know? What's like, the last thing you'd expect me to listen to? I don't know.
Well, you could say something like Hanson, but that gets kind of skeezy.
Yeah, like emo. Yeah, that, you know. Yeah. Did you say Falling in Reverse? Like that would be
right.
But that's hard rock, and I grew up on hard rock ultimately, so that's sort of. But you know, it almost had to be for me like a ragtime or something. Like I was totally devoted to ragtime. That's all I'm into is ragtime music. You know, and of course that's hipster too. I don't know. I just think it's funny. I love this story. It's stupid, but
Adam, you think this guy's got a screw loose, or you think he just loves Tupac?
In a way, this guy's kind of a hero, right? Like, was he doing his job well outside of the?
I'm going to say no.
Because if you could maintain being the head of a massive bureaucracy and at the same time being a Tupac mega fan, then, you know, like let your freak flag fly, like, you know, Godspeed you, sir. I'm okay with that.
66. Oh my gosh. I just love him. He's just a white haired guy in a bad suit. And he's.
Here's another issue, though.
He was 25. Tupac was 25 when he died.
And not to drag this out, Tupac, as do many punk and metal artists, Tupac has many lyrics that are outright misogynistic and very violent. If you just email employees violent poems, that'd be a real problem. But is it okay if it's Tupac doing it? I'm not sure.
I'm just thinking about the constant use of the N-word.
There's another issue.
When you got this guy in his mid-60s, that's what I'd like. Would you like to see this old guy rapping these songs?
Is this a guy from an Adam Sandler film?
Makes me laugh. Yeah, he does. He looks like the kind of guy who tried to keep Adam Sandler from achieving his full potential. I don't know, John. I don't know what's going on in the world.
So from the most whimsical story to maybe one that doesn't have all that much whimsy. So the Mystetics, is that how we say this?
I believe it's Mystetics, yes.
Mystetics. So this is a band that includes Brendan Canny and Joel Alley of Fugazi, along with Anthony Parag, who is a jazz guitar prodigy. Am I correct on his?
Correct.
On that. Correct. So anyways, so they announced their second album. It's called Anthropocosmic Nest, which is just like a fucking Hawkwind title.
If nobody can pronounce your band name, the best thing you can do is also make records that people can't pronounce.
I mean, you may as well. I mean, then sales I'm also. Skyrocket. I mean, in my defense, I'm tired and I'm an idiot. So maybe normal people can pronounce the name of this record.
That might be in the band's defense, but yeah, okay.
So yeah, so anyways. Anthropocosmic Nest. It's coming out on September 6th.
Whatever rolls right off the tongue.
On the legendary Discord Records. The band's also touring this summer behind it. So they have a song out that you can check out on Bandcamp right now. It's called Better Wings. And you can go find their tour dates out on the internet there. They're going to be... are they coming up here? They might be coming up here. Or maybe they're
They played Grand Rapids on the last tour, and I know some people did go just because you got two guys from Fugazi, but it was not. I've never been a huge instrumental music fan. This is not something that really tickles my fancy.
Well, see, normally I would agree with that, but I was listening to this way before the show, and I was midway through this, and I was like, wow, I'm kind of into this. This is.
Well, how about for an hour? Are you into it for an hour?
Can I be on drugs?
I thought you were going to say, can I buy a vowel? Like, yes.
Are you allowed to be on drugs while listening to Fugazi? I'm not sure about that, Adam. Maybe you are.
Fugazi's not the boss of me.
Is that disrespectful?
No,
is that
cool? No, you can fucking be on drugs and listen to Minor Threat. Totally I don't cool. give a shit about this thing. You need a level of sobriety to respect which stuff Saint Ian has allowed for. Doesn't work that way in my head.
What if Ian said, I only want you to listen to my music if you're sober. If you're not sober, I don't want you to listen to my music. What would you do then, Adam?
You know what I would say? I would say, Ian, I'll gladly listen to Fugazi and Minor Threat sober, but that band with your wife, I just couldn't do it unless I'm loaded.
I'd like the Evens. I think you're good.
Well, you're allowed to think that.
I would agree with Tom on that. I generally think that that taking any of these punk rock megastars and putting them up on some pedestal where we're going to treat them like they're a philosopher king is a fucking stupid and dangerous thing to do, even if that person is Ian MacKaye. So I don't really care what he thinks about what I'm going to do with his music.
Wow.
Yeah.
Adam White versus Ian MacKaye. Adam, now that's the punkest thing I've ever heard you say.
This is a
taking on Ian MacKaye, the king of punk.
I'm not taking on Ian MacKaye. I'm taking on hero worship. And while I think Ian MacKaye is a brilliant artist, especially within the context of Fugazi, and maybe not so much in the context of the Evens, I'm happy to listen to these people's music. I'm happy to listen to their aesthetics.
I can admit that it's probably just over my head. You know what I mean? It's probably, they're good musicians. I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, that was kind of what I got out of it. Like, I don't have any fluency in what good or bad, you know, virtuosic jazz guitar is supposed to sound like. But as I was listening to this, it just struck me as I was like, wow, this is really accomplished. Like, this is good. Whatever the objective meaning of good is, this is
really accomplished. Now, where the hell is my Less Than Jake 7-inch?
I don't know. I didn't alphabetize those all that well, I guess. I don't know where that is.
seven inches are hard because they don't have the spine.
I know, and I'm also lazy, so I will just like get a new one and just like shove it in the row.
I have mine in alphabetical order, I think, but the fact of the matter is I should thin them out.
I'm definitely having a bit of a crisis.
Never get all this deep.
I'm having a crisis of record organization right now, and I really need to take like a day off work and then somehow
take 2 weeks off.
Well, yeah, if I could take a couple weeks off of work, but then also a couple weeks off from my kids, but also not have to leave my house, I could solve so many problems.
The problem with the record organization, and I'm sure you guys can both agree with me on this, is you go to organize your records like, oh God, I haven't listened to this in a long time. Next thing you know, you're listening to records.
I think
that's the way it's supposed to be. I mean, I think that's fine, but that's the way it goes.
It's better. Oh, I hate these. I better throw them in the shelf so I don't have to look at them, you know? Like, honestly, like, flipping through your records is so much fun. I don't know why, but it's like, oh, this Rare Dead Kennedys pressing. Oh, Black Flag, oh, with the misspelling. Oh, you know, it's so much fun, you know?
All of a sudden, we get John Gentile talking about orgasms.
Adam's seen my Throne of Power. Adam, you've seen my Throne of Power.
Where you sit and stare at your stuff.
Yes.
Well, mine is delegated to the basement, unfortunately. I do have a bunch of records up here in our little back room library where I podcast, but the majority is in the basement.
That's my main problem right now, is that the little office that I've carved out for myself in our house, which is where all my records and stuff are, which is where I record, I haven't entered this room since the last week when we did this, and it's just because it's the summer, and if I have a little bit of time, I should probably be, you know, doing something outside and not sitting in the basement where all the air conditioning barfs its coldness to make this horrible swamp of, you know.
Well, my wife offered recently, said, well, you should put like a listening room in the basement. But I'm like, then I would just disappear down there. It's better that I'm in the back room where I'm sort of more accessible to the, you know, the rest of the family, I think.
Well, we let this Peter out here, haven't we? So,
yeah, well, you got to remember, it seems like we did a very long podcast, but we did have like that 15-minute segment in the middle that was just you and I BSing that we didn't record.
Oh, all right. Well, you've got some time then to play like a 25-minute reggae song if you want, Tom.
You know what? Actually, you know what I'm going to play. So, John, did you see that you saw the new Guar tour dates, I'm sure?
I did, yes.
So, are they doing Philly?
Yes, they are.
They're doing Grand Rapids on a Monday night. Woohoo. And I've seen Guar probably about 15 times now. So, I'm really, like, if it was just Guar, an evening with Guar, I would probably skip it. But they have two intriguing bands touring with them. Actually, my buddies from Against the Grain are playing with them too, from Detroit. But they have an old 80s thrash band from Arizona called Sacred Reich playing with them. And I have never seen Sacred Reich, so I'm actually pretty stoked about it. That's in September. And they also have Toxic Holocaust playing for them, who's a great modern thrash band. But anyway, so let's play some. Is it my turn to play a song? Is that what we're doing? Oh, let's do.
That was the intent of my lead in for you to talk about this.
I lost my train of thought as I was getting all excited about this Guar show, because I think actually the night before I'm going to go see DRI and Deathwish. So I'm going to be thrashed out. But anyway, so let's play a Sacred Reich song. Let's play one of their more fun songs. Let's do Surf Nicaragua by Sacred Reich, great old 80s thrash band, because I've been thrashing a lot at home, and I would like you, the listener, to thrash along with me.
That's it. If you want to send us email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. John, any advice for the people?
No.